we got what it takes for the circle to break. Revolution lives in me.
Welcome to the Untamed and Unashamed podcast. I'm your host, Jade Bryce, and I am a certified love, intimacy, and relationship coach. I help women reconnect to their bodies and their pleasure, and I help men to become a safe space for that by becoming fully embodied leaders. The mission of this podcast is to expand our capacity in living untamed and unashamed. As we navigate life's ups and downs with all of the vulnerability, compassion, and openness that we can muster, and celebrating our bravery in all of it. Along with the help of guests from all walks of life, we'll discover new truths while doing some unlearning, and we'll gain valuable tools for becoming who we already are. So I invite you to open your heart and be untamed and unashamed. Before we jump in with today's guest, I just want to ask you for a quick favor to leave a review if you haven't already. It makes all the difference. It really lights up my day when I get to read these from you guys. It is my love language is words of affirmation. So I also work really hard on this podcast, and knowing that it matters to you guys, it makes it all worth it. It makes it worth it for me, feeling like I'm, you know, talking to these incredible people. It's kind of like therapy for me. And knowing that it's making a difference for y'all makes all the hours spent all the more worth it. So if you could leave a review, that would mean so much. All right. So today's guest is a writer, mentor, and guide for women on the path of the devotional feminine. Her approach is rooted in sovereignty, soulfulness, and full range embodiment. Her advanced work, including her upcoming group journey, Chalice, helps women restore right relationship to men and masculine principles in service of union and legacy with men worthy of worship. Today, we will talk with her about reclaiming the innate safety, potency, and discernment of our wombs and remember our rightful, oracular natures as women. But men, this one's for you too. Please help me welcome Ginger Curran to Untamed and Unashamed. Hi.
Hi, Jade. Oh, such a pleasure to be here. Hi.
Hi. So it's really funny because I've been following you since like 2020. And so I know a good part of your story, at least when it comes to, you know, going through an uncoupling and then, you know, having this partner now and just the messages that you've put out, I've always really resonated with. But where we first connected as far as like messaging was because of the movie Barbie. Almost positive. Okay. I was like, where are we getting off on this topic from? But yeah, it was because of the movie Barbie. And with that, the popular narrative about the patriarchy. And we were relating to the word differently than what you commonly see. So I want to just read like what you had sent me that day. It's a little bit long, but it won't take long. You said, "I am in deep respect of strong integrated patriarchs, a male leader of a family society unit. I would also personally rather be in a healthy, loving, mutually respectful relationship with all men as a baseline way of moving through the world than to perpetuate a narrative like men are pigs, down with the patriarchy, that feels awful to my body and also doesn't produce the results I desire to see in my life, in my relationships with men, and in my union. I'm on the same page with you about still learning all the nuances of how the feminine and masculine can, and I would say must, rise together. When I reflect on my life, I gain much more when I, as the embodiment of the feminine within my union, descend. He, as the embodiment of the masculine in our union, rises. That's not to say that I don't have my own rising to do as a woman, but in union, my preferred position is in the depths, in the body, in the underworld, sourcing from the mystery, not in the mind, building in the outside world. He is much better than that, than I am." Yeah. so beautiful. And like when I read it, like even just reading it now, like I get, my body gets so juicy, you know, when you hear the other narratives about how like we must rise and, you know, all of that. And I agree with you, we must rise, but together, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. that other, it's very constricting and a bit, you know, I don't know. It's not that there's an anger that comes up. There's just this like constriction and stiffness. And when I read your words, it feels so juicy and it feels like, especially in partnership, it feels yummy. And then of course, when you're in partnership in that way, it bleeds out into the world, right? So, and vice versa, you know, it has to be both. But yeah, I'd love, you know, before we get into the descending of the feminine and the rising of the masculine, is there anything you want to expand on from there?
Oh, thank you so much for reading that. Honestly, I get emotional and I don't even feel in a way like they're my words. Does that make any sense? It's like, it just came through me. And when I reached out to you, seeing your response to the Barbie film, I just felt such a resonance. I had to share that. So I just feel very received by you. And that feels amazing to me. Yeah. And I also recognize that, you know, for some women specifically listening, like, they might not feel the juice yet in some of those words, some of those statements. And I get that, because like, there was a lot in me that was armored off and closed off from receiving from men. It was like very much, I'm on my own. I got this. I can take care of myself. I'm sure you can resonate with that. And it was just a deepening in my own self-knowing to come into this place where it's like, wait, what actually feels good to my body? Does it feel good to me to be resisting men out in the world all the time and think that they're against me? Like, no, that doesn't feel good. That feels terrible. That feels like I have a constant enemy to fight, but that's not, it's not true. It's not the reality. So just, yeah, again, hearing you read those words, I'm like very emotional already. Yeah. And just ready to dive in. So thank you.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what it feels like is not so much in, you know, I was like, it's not anger. What is it? It's fear. Fear of power, of a man's power, which when a man is in his power and in an integrated way, it's one of the most holiest things. But if we're in fear of that and we're resisting it, it's never going to be in an integrated way. Right. And so, that's a really beautiful thought. And I resonate with you in that, even 2 years ago, I was afraid of it. Like, this is new for me to be excited about it, and to desire it in union and in the world, because I grew up, without men. Like, there were no men in our family because they were all cheaters. And so like, it was all women in my family. And then I got adopted into a very religious family, which was, very dogmatic and, very old school in the fact that like, a woman could not hear from God on her own. She could not go to college without her husband's permission. Like, we were allowed to speak in the church and lead, but the husband was our authority in a very, and even now I like that idea of my husband being my authority, right? I don't have a husband, but if I did, however, the way that it was there was a very, disempowering way. Whereas like the way I view it now is I view it in an empowering way because I trust him to guide and lead. And then it was simply just because he was a man in the church. You know what I mean? And so I came from that wounding. And then, you know, a previous partnership was very wounding in the same way of trying to dictate how I connected to God, trying to dictate how I, how my spirituality felt for me, all of those things. And feeling the way that I do now, I don't know how I would have related then. Maybe it would have been from a more healed place, and because it wasn't until that relationship that I realized all that wounding was there. And it, you know, it's just been in the last 2 years where it's like, I want to surrender to it. I want to be provided for by the masculine in a way that feels, like that covering, you know, where I don't have the articulation for that quite yet, but, I know though that like that's probably when women think of patriarchy, what we're describing is probably not what they're afraid of. That's probably not the, it's the narratives that have been pushed that, you know, most are afraid of.
That and like this top-down hierarchical, tyrannical version of the masculine, which of course, I mean, as women, we can be tyrants too. This is not just about sex or gender. It's about energetics. It's about what are you embodying as a human being? Mm-hmm. And I find it's probably similar to experience the moment where you're like, oh, wait, I actually can trust this man, my partner, in his power, is also the moment where you have this defense power inside of yourself, where you trust yourself as a woman. I trust myself as a woman. I'm not abdicating responsibility from over my life. It's like, I had similar wounding around the masculine in terms of like, I can't lean on that. Like, I have to have the structure for myself, right? Slightly different because I didn't grow up in that religious of a household in a dogmatic way, but definitely I grew up with like chaotic mother. Like, I can't actually trust the feminine. My dad was actually more reliable in terms of consistency and structure. So I got a really beautiful imprint that unfortunately a lot of women don't get these days. And I think that made it a lot easier for me to ultimately sort of come full circle and not need to be hyper independent, but actually be able to rely on a man who, you know, is powerful and potent in his own rightful way, not from like a power over me way, but like power with me way. And that is common. Guaranteed, there's tons of men out there that like want that dynamic with women. And, but if our pain body is saying, oh no, any form of masculine power is bad and wrong, I can't have that in my life, I have to be in control, they're never going to actually come into their own fullness, let alone us coming into our own fullness, like you were saying, letting go, actually being provided for, actually surrendering, feeling the juiciness that comes with all of that, and the safety, and oh my God, the actual, like the relief, the exhale. So many of us, I think, we just want to like relax, right? And we don't have those spaces, or so we think, to relax, but they're there. Like, they're 100% there.
Yeah. And I think a big part of it too, is when we think of the patriarchy, maybe a lot of people feel that that means we're not equals.
Totally.
And like you said, kind of the above below, or top bottom, whichever word you use, like, and it's not that we're not equals in any way. It's a different dynamic.
Yeah, it's okay. So like the way that I feel about the word equal is like, what level are we talking about? Soul to soul, we are all equal. Like, that's clear, you know, like soul to soul. But equal doesn't mean same. It doesn't mean like we're the exact same. Like, we're supposed to complement each other. That's nature. Otherwise we wouldn't have human beings anymore. Like, we wouldn't exist anymore if we were just the same as men. It just wouldn't work. And right. So it's like, how can we complement each other? And I feel personally, there's no dogma there either. You know, every relationship is different. Everybody's going to find their own balance, their own weaving of like, let's say masculine, feminine energies, different percentages, like great, play with that, experiment. We're humans in this like free will plane of existence. Have fun, like try it out, see what works for you. But yeah, I mean, as you're saying, like there's this pattern that we're noticing around this relationship to kind of, yeah, the patriarchy as it's given to us. Like, we don't even have the chance to, yeah, relate to men without that kind of in the back of our minds. That's the part that I want to point to. It's like, we didn't choose that as young girls growing up. We were just handed it. And it's like, that's an assumption that we have to question. Yeah.
Yeah. That goes into, you know, a point that you brought up about the feminine descending and the masculine rising. Can you give an example of what that looks like in relationship?
Yeah, definitely. And before I go into that, just like really quick credit where credit's due, because I have slightly different languaging. It's more like down and in for me and up and out for the masculine. Yeah. And the descent and rising actually comes from a mentor and an absolute dear sister of mine, Christina Louise. You can find her on Instagram as well. So if anybody wants to check her out, I always just like to credit my teachers. It's really important to me. So yeah. Thank you for that. But yeah, so like, for example, and this will probably trigger a bunch of women too, if they're really in the career mindset. But June, I had been working in software sales for like 6 years at that point, you know, good career, obviously could have stayed on that track. I was achieving, it was fine. Like, everything was kind of normal in that way. But there was a deeper truth that kind of started to present itself. And it was actually my man who said to me like, hey, love, I don't think that you need to be working for very much longer. I actually think that you need a break. And like, let's talk about that if that's something that you want. And I was like, wait, what do you mean not work? What do you mean step back? What do you mean lean into just my body and just beingness? Like, what do you mean? Like, don't I have to earn, right? Don't I have to keep achieving to be valid, to be like worthy of something in this world? And he was like, no. Like, I got you. It's okay. You want to take a break? You want to rest? Like, don't worry. Like, take the summer. I literally want to gift you a summer. And my whole, you know, my heart wanted that, you know, like, oh my God, what a gift. But then my mind and everything that I had been, kind of like conditioned growing up, especially also from my dad, like have a good career, even from him, right? It was like, no, I have to keep working. Otherwise, who am I? Right. Mm-hmm. And he was like, love, you have my love. I got you. And I was like, okay, all right, fine.
I love that.
Yeah. So I took the summer entirely off, which is something I had not taken time off from work since I was probably 15. I've always been working in some way, shape.
Same.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You get it. So, I mean, that's a perfect example where, you know, with that, as I stepped back from that sort of like normie life in a way of career and continuing with sales and such, he also benefited. Like, go figure, I got to relax. And then he got the benefit of being around a highly nourished woman who was well slept, well rested, you know, like really deeply in my body because I had the resources and time to be. And so, of course, that was highly nourishing for him. And then because he was nourished, he got to pour more into me. So it was this really beautiful, virtuous cycle that started to happen. It was just super cool. And we wouldn't have been able to experience that had he, you know, not kind of nudged me in that direction and had I not been receptive to his guidance in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. So, and I mean, that could be for a woman who still holds that fear in her body, that could have felt controlling and would have stolen the gift and the beauty of it. So that's an example. Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. Trying to think, when I think of, the feminine descending and the masculine rising, it's not that I like, cause the underworld is such a woo term, you know, but it's like, I think of like the feminine as like the access to the underworld, the access to nature and like to deep spiritual practices that she holds just within her being. And when he is in union with her, when he's in intimacy with her, something different comes alive in him that allows him to rise out into the world and in his purpose in a different way than if there wasn't that nourishment from her. That's what I thought of when I heard those words, and it's the same thing really, but that's the visual I get.
Absolutely. And as you said, the underworld, like, what does that even mean? Right. But I feel, you know, in our native state, you know, a lot of us, we have deep intuitive nudges all the time as women, right? We have these like knowings. We just get these knowings, like gut knowings. I don't know how else to call them. Deep knowings. And I feel like they are not only really valuable for us in terms of how do I want to live my life? All right, cool. Like, let me actually check inward first versus checking outward with the world and expectations and who wants what for me and who's telling me what to do. It's like, no, let me listen to the deepest thing in me first, move from that place. And that also applies, like you're saying, in partnership and unions. Like, you know, if your man, for example, if he's about to make a career change or if he has a decision to make or whatever, like, you bet that your intuition is valuable for the both of you. Mm-hmm. 100%. And that is like, you know, it can only be valuable if we approve of our inner knowing first versus like looking outside of ourselves for guidance. So it kind of loops back around to your topic at the beginning of that dogmatic structure of like, you can only go to God through a priest. It's like, absolutely not. That is institutional. That is not the nature of things. Mm-hmm. Go below that. Go underneath that. Go back to the source. Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. And I have a little like thread to pull on there, but I'm going to save it because it also goes with another question later. But the other thing that I really would love to talk to you about is when we romanticize a man, we aren't seeing him. Mm. Because, oh my gosh, am I a romantic? Like, I really am. Like, I am a manifester. Like, that's not my human design, but I am like a powerful manifester. I fantasize and I desire and I romanticize. And that is how I am just as a woman, like deeply. But I do understand that if we're romanticizing a man, we really aren't seeing him. So, I'll let you expand on that.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. And I'll speak to kind of some of the layers because absolutely. Yes. I mean, I would never want to shut off my creational abilities. Like you're saying, these like creational visioning, manifesting, like creatrix abilities, they're essential as women. But at the same time, it's like when I'm relating to another human being, especially if it's a man that I desire partnership with, I also have to be grounded in reality, shared reality with him, because otherwise, what are we building on? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no foundation. And it's also, this is like a key nuance of a piece. It's disrespectful, actually, to any human being, let alone a man, to try and build something on top of fluff or something that I've invented. Because then what am I doing? I'm actually, in a way, I am sort of forcing him to fit into my vision of who he should be. Mm-hmm. And how do we feel when somebody does that to us? Like, I don't feel good. Someone's like, you should be this way. I really need you to be this way so that you can fit into my vision. Mm-hmm. It's a different form of dominance. It's subtle, but it's dominance. And it's not dominance in a benevolent way, in a nice way. So it's like, okay, how can we actually get with the reality, the ground level truth of who a man is, where he's at in his life, what he's able to give in relationship. And guess what? The best way to find that out is to ask him directly, clearly, and then zip your mouth, which will be hard for most women, myself included, mm-hmm. who want to keep asking questions, zip the mouth and just listen. And when he's done talking, he'll be done and he'll make it very clear that that was all he had to say. Then you can ask another question to get more clarity, more clarity. Where are you? What are you willing to give? What are you available for? And like, that's a tricky, I mean, believe me, Jade, you know this, like it's hard on our bodies sometimes. Our nervous systems are like, oh, that's freaking vulnerable.
Well, because our number one desire is safety and security.
Yeah. Oh, and he might say something that feels unsafe to us. Mm-hmm. But guess what? If we don't allow ourselves to get with the reality, then ultimately it's going to be an unsafe, quote unquote, situation for us, because we'll be living in a fantasy versus actually living inside of a union with a man who genuinely can support us, genuinely can be there with us and for us and wants that.
Yeah. So how do you decipher between, because it is, you know, we have this romantic vision of how we want our relationship to be and how we want our man to be, right? Mm-hmm. When we have that conversation, or when we want to see him for who he really is, if there is lack of alignment in that shared reality, like if our realities look different, how do you discern if you step more into like, okay, that's not the romantic vision I had for my life.
Mm.
Or if you're like, okay, well, I'm going to hold out for my romantic vision, right?
Mm.
Because there's something to that too, right? Like no relationship is going to have it all, but you know what you're looking for. You know how you want to feel, you know how you want your partner to feel towards you. And if there's a lack of that,
yeah,
which is the question that I was going to save that thread for, was about the clarity. Sure. If there's a lack of that, how do you discern that, okay, well then maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I, you know, or is it, how do you know when you hold out for a man's clarity, you know, like, or for a shared vision, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is a really deep question that we could spend like a year in deep arts training on.
And it's so educational.
And it's so exactly. Yeah. So the first like baseline truth is you got to trust your own internal deep knowing. Got to trust that above all. If you're getting signal internally, like, oh, wow, this really isn't for me. Even though you might have that romantic vision, it's like, okay, you got to trust the deepest thing. You know, every one of us does. And then of course, like the nuance is, well, you know, in my own life, I've had this experience. I haven't had it in the beginning with my beloved, with Shane. You know, he and I had shared, as you were talking about, felt resonance between us. Our bodies, our spirits, our hearts felt really, really good together. There was a lot of romance. There is a lot of romance. And yet some of the like little actual pieces of, not little, but like constellation of how our lives functionally fit together, they weren't in alignment yet. It was clunky. It was like a wrench in the gears. You know what I mean? And it's a sort of, this is such a challenging question for a podcast, because then it's all about the energetics, right? So don't listen to what I am saying and take it as dogma. Listen to yourself first. You have to listen to yourself first. For me, in that situation, I could see those sort of like top level parts that were kind of clunky. And then I could feel the current underneath of truth of us together in the depths of leakless union. So it was like, there was the overexpression of the like
you could point at the things in our lives and say, well, that's not compatible. That's never going to work. But they were top level. The energetic current underneath, how he was showing up, how I was showing up, how we were being with each other, how we felt with each other consistently, even in the confrontational moments of like, how is this going to work? It's like, we had trust that there was something deeper guiding us. And we were in, I'll use this very potent word, we were in submission to that current above all. We were not in submission to like the level of our ego mind that wanted life to look a certain way. Mm-hmm. We were in submission to something deeper. So it's again, it's like you got to drop below that mental layer and actually feel. And that's the tricky part for most human beings, because we are taught from the time we are very young that it is not safe to feel and it's not safe to trust ourselves, that we need mm-hmm. to look outside of ourselves. But it's the opposite. We have to go within. We have to go in and down. Even men, in and down. Like mm-hmm. the instinct, the knowing is there as well. Yeah. Thank you for asking. It's again, really challenging question.
So yeah. Especially because it's situational. So it's hard to give like a, you know, an answer to all. And that, you know, I mentioned, you know, that to you before, like every single thing you've ever posted, I'm just like, yes, like full body resonance, so juicy. Except for one thing. And it's not that I wasn't resonant. It's that it triggered me. It caused pain in my body. Mm-hmm. And that was it. It's this question about clarity, because it's so similar to what we're just talking about. And it's, you said a man's lack of clarity is clarity. And I have never been okay with a man lacking clarity about me. It hasn't happened a lot, but when it has, it's been from me, it's like a very big, I want a man that knows what he has and isn't willing to let it get away. That's just like, you're my woman, whatever it takes, we're doing it. And that's how I desire like my forever person to be, right? So I'd love to just discuss how to be with the lack of clarity, if that's there, and also know our worth and our desires for that ultimate claiming. Because to me, not feeling fully chosen has always created a huge lack of safety. And that's when the most conflicts happen. However, the partners that I've been with that are like, we're doing this, like you're mine. And it, obviously they didn't work out because I didn't fully choose them, but the ones who did fully choose me and were like, I'm not letting you go, like whatever it takes. That was the safest I had ever felt. Mm-hmm. And so, the lack of clarity is confusing, because how do you be with a man's lack of clarity as well as your desire for like, and I've seen it with so many of my friends, within months, their partners were like, this is it. Like, I called this in, you're it. Like, thank you, God. And they know what's right in front of them, you know? And so it's like, how do you be with that desire to feel that from a man and also be with his, I don't know, or his, I need a few years, even like some men want years before they're willing to marry a woman. And for some women that feels good. And other women are like, what?
Totally. Totally. First of all, it is absolutely rightful if his lack of clarity feels like shit to you. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Like absolutely 100% rightful. And again, if that is the case, you do not have to engage. You do not have to pass go, like go no further. Right. So there's in that specific, like mini teaching, what I mean by his lack of clarity is clarity. It's just that his lack of clarity itself, it is information. It's data. It doesn't mean that you have to continue with him at all. Oh my goodness. No way. If what you are desiring is to feel a man's claim consistently in the very beginning, like let's say, you know, after however short amount of time it is for you, if that is your deepest desire, then track that and follow that and allow that to calibrate you, and do not accept something that is not true for you. However, in my own experience, I've been initiated myself, and this is the tricky nuance piece. I have been initiated by the man's lack of clarity, because what his lack of clarity brings up in me is what I need to confront. It's the medicine for me, where my body gets insecure, where I get all bent out of shape. And that's actually something that's something for me to hold, and for me as like personal alchemy to work with. I got to go to God. I got to go to like, you know, go into my spirituality. I got to like rest in my deeper knowing, whatever that is. So for me personally, and this is not going to be the case for every woman, but it has been medicine only because I've had to then confront parts of me that were sourcing externally for safety and leaning on, you know, in sort of a codependent way, leaning on a man for safety. But again, it's all a very personal thing. It's like, if that's not rightful for you, 0% needing to stick with a man who's not clear on his claim of you. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Does that clarify a little bit? Yeah.
It does. Yeah. And I guess a man's lack of clarity actually gives you more clarity on if you're able to be with it, you know, yeah. be in the relationship. So painful as it is.
Yeah. And one other thing I would add is, like, you know, it's also rightful to ask for clarity around his lack of clarity. And this is tricky because it requires us to do that without blaming him for not being clear. But if we can cleanly ask a man, like, okay, I respect your need for more time to feel into whatever, for instance, identity pieces need to die for you to step into the identity of husband, which is a big thing for men. That's like a duty. They actually have to do a lot of things to be a husband, whereas we don't have to do, quote unquote, as much to be wife. It's a being for us, but they actually very much relate to a role like husband, for example, or father, as like the feeling of ready for a man is not a feeling. It's a, let me get these things in place logistically so that I can provide X, Y, and Z physical, tactile, tangible things for my woman, for my family. So readiness for men is like very action oriented. It's very milestone oriented in terms of income, in terms of ability to provide emotionally and time-wise. It's like, we feel ready in a second, women. We're like, I feel ready. I'm so ready to be a wife. I'm so ready to be claimed. It's a feeling. We don't need to do anything, but they do, because they're actually providing in the tactile, tangible world. It's a very different experience. And sometimes that does take time, but it doesn't mean that we as women have to overextend and wait longer than is rightful for our systems.
Yeah. Thank you. That was a beautiful answer. I'm so excited to tell you about Paleo Valley beef sticks, which are one of the healthiest snacks on the market. I tend to not like beef jerky type snacks because they're usually so dry, but these are so juicy and full of flavor. I've been upping my protein for my overall health and physique, so I have zero guilt snacking on these. And because it's a protein snack, I feel fuller in between meals. They are also a great environmental snack choice because they're 100% grass-fed and finished, sourced from small domestic farms that contribute to regenerative agriculture. I feel good doing my part to put an end to inhumane factory farms that negatively impact the environment by the food I choose to purchase. Also, almost every meat snack on the market is made with a processing agent called encapsulated citric acid in order to have a long shelf life, but ECA can cause a ton of health issues. Paleo Valley Beef Sticks uses fermentation instead to give the beef sticks a long shelf life without harmful acids and chemicals, and fermentation is great for gut health. They're also only flavored with organic spices. I'm telling you guys, when you unwrap these, it's like literally juice comes out of the wrapper. That's how juicy and just flavorful these things are. You'll love them. Head over to paleovalley.com/jade for 15% off your first order. That's paleovalley.com/jade. paleovalley.com/jade for 15% off your first order. Now on with the show. I think the question that flows next with this is how a woman sets the tone with men. And what I think you mean by that is, like, if we're in our juiciness, if we're in, it's not going to be all the time. We get tired, we get cranky, we get in our luteal. Okay. But yeah, when we're in our juiciness, our playfulness, our receptiveness, we can feel how they show up differently. Is that a bit what you mean by setting the tone?
Yeah. And I'll credit another teacher here. So Jillian Pothier would be the source point for that. So, you know, like, she sets the tone, he sets the terms, feminine frequency goes first. The feminine does not lead, but her frequency goes first, right? These sorts of teachers. I just want to credit another absolutely brilliant, brilliant, deep teacher of these arts. So tone, emotional quality, how we animate a space, our beingness, our, yes, our moods, you know, our literal emotions. We're so influential. Like when people talk about female empowerment, I'm like, we already are empowered. We literally have all the power because we are the ones who birth everything. Mm-hmm. We birth reality every single second. We're always creating. We're always birthing something. And so the question is, you know, if we're going to bring a little element of sort of self-responsibility to the picture, what do I choose to create moment by moment? Mm-hmm. You brought the word manifesting in earlier. You know, depending on what language people use, they might resonate with that. Like, what am I manifesting in my external reality? For me, it feels more like an emanation. It's like, it's emanating from within. Like, and if my light is really big internally, if I'm well-resourced, if I'm well-slept, I've moved my body, if I feel juicy and pleasured or whatever it is, then my emanation will land in the people around me, the nervous systems around me. It's going to affect them in that positive way if they are receptive to it. You know, and vice versa, which is totally rightful. You mentioned luteal phase of our cycles as cycling beings. We're not the same week to week. Like we're just not. We're just not. And to be honest with ourselves about that, I feel is actually such a gift both to ourselves and to the world. So it's like, I don't have enough to give right now. I can't give as much, but I'll communicate that. So my man knows, hey, I don't have as much to give to you right now. So he's not expecting me to be my ovulation self when I'm actually late luteal.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But I take that upon myself to inform him because I want him to have at least some understanding of what woman he's in relationship with this week.
Yeah.
You know, like 1,000 women in one. We're changing every single day. And that is rightful. That is biology. Like that is beautiful. That's nature. And like, there's no need to pretend that we're the same all the time. It's such a, speaking of things that we've inherited that aren't ours, that's another one. I'm like, dang, if I could just wave a magic wand and have women just get that they're not supposed to be the same every day.
Yeah.
That would be like my magic wand moment. So anyway, I don't know where I was going with that, but thank you for the question.
Yeah. Okay. So that we're talking about, you know, ovulation and cyclical and all of that. So, maybe we can bring in the connection between a woman's womb and her sense of safety.
Okay. So right to the root, all the way down in the body. And this again, you know, if people are listening and they're like, what does that even mean? You know, only relating to the root through sex, for example, it's like, that's one way, right? But all the way down, like the deepest place in our bodies as women, as females, is this creational void, this womb, this uterus, like both literally and energetically, right? It's this space. Men don't have it. Like males do not have this womb within them. Mm-hmm. And even by the way, as a side note, you know, if a woman has a hysterectomy or something and has her uterus removed, she still has the energetic templating of a womb space. It's still there. It's just templated, right? Mm-hmm. It will influence how she moves through the world and just all the way down the body. You know, that's also an area for so many women where we've experienced trauma. We've experienced betrayal. We've experienced trespassing. So like really deep seated stuff that, you know, if we weren't held in those moments following that really intense experience, some of those sort of emotions and armor pieces, like armor, really can get stuck in the fascia of our bodies, can get really crystallized in the tissue, in, you know, in that area. It's such a sensitive and such a feeling area of our bodies. Mm-hmm. So speaking of safety, like, wow, when we're, you know, let's go way back, you know, when we had this experience at some point in our childhood of just the innocence of what it is to be a little girl frolicking through the fields. Could be super, super young or whatever it is, like some level of playfulness, maybe not frolicking because I understand not everybody frolicked through fields of wildflowers as children, but just that playfulness, that innate sense of safety, innocence, moving through the world. There's like a restoration. If we can filter back down all through those layers of hurt, of sorrow, of grief, and believe me, that means feeling all of that too. So that's the scary part that most people turn away from. But if we are willing to actually go there and filter down through those layers, like there is an innate sense of safety and innocence and cherishing and like genuine creational capacity that's below all of that. Mm. It's hard to get back down there. Like, don't get me wrong. It's not, that journey is not for the faint of heart, but the initiations along the way to get right back down into that oof, like big wide open space where your intuition is there. The seat of your power as a woman is actually down there. The safety that is like the clunk in your body all the way down your central channel. It's like, that's where it lives. I know I'm speaking in somewhat woo-woo terms, but when it's actually interesting. And you said this word earlier, woo-woo to me sometimes actually means somatics. It's like the body-based stuff.
Mm.
Like when we talk about the body, we have to talk about energy. So, you know, if you go and see an acupuncturist, you go and see a massage therapist over the course of many, many years, you're going to learn a lot about your body that sounds really woo-woo, but is tactile. It's like, actually, you could like point to it. So I think we have this colloquial term woo-woo just to describe anything that's not mental.
That's true. Yeah. I think it's maybe in some spiritual communities, it can feel like hearing the word woo-woo is like, it can feel almost like out of body instead. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Like etheric, like it's your aura. Mm-hmm. It's like, no. I'm talking about your literal body. Get down in there. Get in there.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing, if I'm to say it for someone who's not used to those terms, it would be the more you're down and in connected to your womb, the more safety you're going to feel in your body.
Yeah, eventually. Yeah. And it might be a process to get there, right? Because first, probably you'd have to feel the grief of being disconnected from your womb. And first, you'd probably have to feel the anger at whoever violated your womb if that happened to you, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. It's like, it's not for the faint of heart. But at the end of that, like, you know, at the end of the rainbow, there's the pot of gold, right? Like you get that safety. It's clunked into you. It's not moving forever. Mm-hmm. It's yours. Nobody can take it from you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay. So there's three more questions left and then the lightning round. So, so you've talked about how a king is not able to be seduced and devotion is the opposite of seduction. So maybe you can expand on that.
I get so giddy when I get to talk about this. Oof, Jade. Yeah. okay. So let me clarify what I mean by king, because I feel like that's a term that's been kind of overused in the spaces that you and I move in. Mm-hmm. And let's say like the feminine realms of Instagram.
Yeah.
So when I say king, I just mean a man who has advanced through certain archetypal journeys in his life and has a kingdom that he considers his domain, that he is in a positive way, ruling over, tending to, making sure everybody inside of his domain is healthy and well. It's this very positive relationship. So again, not tyrant king. That's not what I'm talking about.
Right.
But a benevolent king, a well-meaning king, right? A kind, wise king. King Arthur comes to mind if you want to like go into the myths, right? You know, he's not able to be seduced because he has extracted himself from anything that, you know, from his own ego, wants validation from a woman. He doesn't need that kind of energetic snack externally anymore. Mm. He is the master of himself, both internally and externally, his domain. So he doesn't need energy snacks. He's got all the food in the world, probably through his woman, through his queen, right? He has all the nourishment through that Garden of Eden. I'm going to use that term as well. Not able to be seduced, it just means self-mastery, right? It's like literally he knows himself so deeply. And like there are men in the world. So I'm sure there are women listening being like, that's nice. That's a dream. Mm-hmm. Like, sure, show me. And I'm like, no, I have met them. Yeah. I literally know them. And these are powerful men. I'm talking consummately powerful with hundreds of millions of dollars of net worth and the internal fortitude to match that. It's bonkers to me. It is wonderful. It's beautiful. I want more of that in the world.
Yeah.
So that's the first part. Remind me of the second part again, love.
How devotion is the opposite of seduction, I think it was.
Yeah. So this is something I was mulling on for a long time. and I'm a word person. So I'm like really picky with words, really intentional. You know this, like you followed me for a while. Mm-hmm. And so I like to sometimes look at the etymology of words to find the energetics underlying them. So devote versus seduce, they're both from Latin, right? The root of devote is to vow. The root of seduce is to lead away from duty. Like to lead, to draw someone away from his duty.
Mm.
So it's to devote to someone is to make a vow to them. Like give something in, how do I say this? In like pristine, promising oath word, like to give them your word, to vow to them. And we do that in the context of like deep service and worship and love. All of these absolutely stunning ideals that we want to feel, even as like romantic women, we're like, yeah, I want devotion from me and I want a man to devote to me and to our union, not just to me as like a little human, but to our union.
Mm-hmm.
There's like an ideal, there's like a growth energy there. And to seducere, it's to lead astray from duty. So it's actually the opposite. It's like to take someone away from that ideal. To take a man away, to lure him away, mm-hmm. or a woman, right? Or mm-hmm. anyone, to lead them from their duty path, their dharma, to use sort of a word from Buddhism briefly, to lead them from their service, take them away from their service, is a totally different energy. And so I was really sitting with like the roots of these words. And, you know, we've all, believe me, like I count myself in here, especially as women, when we discover that we can manipulate men and get them to do what we want. That is a highly charged sensation. And we feel really powerful in those moments that we discover that about ourselves. I've been there. You know, I had a whole phase where I was like, I can get a man to do whatever, like, you know, power and control, manipulation, like all of that through seduction, through using my femininity, through extracting my femininity and in a transactional relationship. Now, I don't have judgment around myself for that because it's like, I had to learn that to be able to speak about it. I had to learn that to be able to integrate it. So there's actually no shame. I feel zero shame. Like, believe me. And there's no guilt. There's no need to shame anybody for going through a process like that. You know, when we come out the other side, we're able to look back and be like, whoa, that was probably not something that I want to keep doing.
Yeah.
Right. It was important for that phase in my life so I could learn something about myself and about the world. You know, I'm sure you understand.
I do. Yeah.
Super clear that you understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I was coming from when I was writing about devotion as the opposite of seduction. Right. Now, super nuanced because I know you can handle it. of course, inside of a union, does your man want to be seduced by you? Of course he does. But it's a different energetic because you're not actually taking from him.
Right.
You're not leading him off his path. You are bringing the juice and the fullness of your inner muse, your vixen, as nourishment to the altar of your union. You're literally giving him something that is super nourishing to him, that will fuel him on his path versus like take him away from it.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. So, yeah, that's exactly what I thought of as well. Like not the same words, but the same type of idea. So I have not heard this before, so I'm really curious for your expansion on it. Is true union entirely obliterates the concept of sovereignty? And if I had to guess, we're talking about interdependence here in a two-person system. But I'll let you go forward with it.
Did I write that? When did I write that?
It may have been years ago because True union entirely obliterates the concept of sovereignty, but you said it in one sentence talking about a different topic. And you were like, actually, and you were like, but that's for another time. And
so I did one of those cliffhanger moments. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oof. So there are so many ways to step into this. And I want to just be really clean about it because of course the danger here, the pitfall here is that people skip to that. Without moving through the necessary phase of like genuine sovereignty and independence where they know their own needs, they can advocate for themselves. That's a really important phase to like feel sovereign and know your sovereignty. So I'm going to reference very briefly David Data's work. So if people want to go really deep on this, he's like old school polarity guru teacher, very good stuff. He's got the three stages of relating. So just reference that, Google it, you'll be able to find it, read his books. He's awesome. When I speak about true union obliterating sovereignty, I'm talking about third stage relating inside of that framework. But to get to the third stage, you have to be able to, for example, individuate first. You actually have to be able to, because otherwise what happens, women become doormats, men become tyrants, or vice versa. Men are doormats, women are tyrants. Mm-hmm. For example, just to speak very in the binary, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah, I already gave the caveat earlier. So that's what I mean when we're at that third stage of like, yes, I know myself as whole and complete unto myself as a human, then and only then does it actually become safe for me to really merge, because I know I can always sort of like come back to my center when needed. But in union, and you know this because you're also building this deep, deep union with your man and for your children, right? Like you are merging lives, you are merging value systems, you are, and I'm same way, I just don't have children yet, you know, with my men. But we are merging in service of the future. We are becoming one unit such that when we create, the creation is really the greater than the sum of our parts could ever possibly be. And it's such a beautiful, it's like almost alchemical again. Like sorry about the woo-woo words, but it's just like, this stuff is divine, you know, like I can't even get around it. It's just like fascinating how perfectly designed it is. I can't just treat it as this, like, oh, well, that's logical. Right. It's so much more than that. And I know you feel that it's like mystical. So yeah, when I'm in that safety in myself and I'm able to give myself over to a man who obviously, again, the prerequisite is he is sovereign in and of himself. He is a master of his own domain in a way. And he can take and hold me with cherishing energy. He cherishes me. He cherishes the gift of me. And vice versa, I absolutely adore, I admire, I value the gift that he is giving me in giving his full self to me. Then we're like, woof, we're down and in together. And it's this like beautiful whirlpool of just like gushy energy and so co-creative. But again, the thing that we can create is greater than the two of us as individuals operating in like, let's say a 50-50 dynamic where we're just split and we have this sort of like business-like transactional relationship. You do this for me, I do this for you, you know? It's tricky to explain in language. It's very easy to identify when you feel it in lived reality.
Yeah.
It's one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you. Okay. So the last topic before the lightning round is devotional yearning versus codependent yearning.
Yeah. This one's a really useful one. I speak about this all the time with women because we've all been there. Okay. So there's a huge difference. First of all, when we yearn for something, when we long for something, there are different textures of longing and yearning. And I just want to split them out so women can have some language to kind of relate to their own experience. Because here's the thing, we all yearn. We're designed to yearn for more. Yeah. We're designed and built to long for more. And that's good. That's creational. It's like we want to be, you know, creating the world around us through like letting men know, letting the world know, this is what I need, you know, this is what I'm longing for. That's a beautiful thing. But what happens sometimes in this sort of like codependent yearning side of things is it becomes very heavy. We like put a burden onto the object of our learning, yearning. We'll like, for instance, we'll throw what I call like energetic hooks at a man to try and get him to fulfill our yearning. Mm-hmm. It's like very murky waters. Doesn't feel good for us. It feels like there's a black hole inside of me. When I feel like in codependent yearning, there's a black hole inside of me. Mm-hmm. I never fill it. It doesn't matter what my man does. It's never good enough. Mm-hmm. I feel probably a little bit on the on the irritable side, maybe angry, sad, sorrowful, depressed. It's like this sludge, right? It's like I'm in a swamp. And I want to pull him down in there with me. You know, that's the codependent yearning. It's really destructive. It's like kind of feeding a hungry ghost, to use terms, you know, addiction counseling and such. So on the other side, to go back into the light yearning, there's this like brilliant, almost, as you were saying, almost on the side of romanticism, like fantastical, like light. I don't know how I feel, like airy fairy in a way, but it's, how do I say this? It's like bubbles. I don't know why I'm just getting bubbles. It's like, whoa, the world could be like this. Like this could be my life. Like, wait a minute. It's almost like beyond a daydream. It's like so alive and vivid. And there's this deep seated, like almost heart pulse of a yearning that's creational. And it draws us towards the world. It draws us towards life. It has us engage more in our lives. It like has us pour our energy outwards. It's this like overflow outwards versus like the codependent yearning. It's like a sucking down and in into the black hole of the swamp. So those are very different textures of yearning. You might, and so this is the interesting part, a woman might still be on the outside, like crying, feeling a lot of emotions in both cases, but the root of those emotions feels entirely different.
Yeah.
One feels like bliss. It's really creational. It's like, oh my gosh, to be a mother, like what? Like I desire this so deeply. I want to cry. It's like overwhelming, or whatever it is. Maybe it's a vision for your business. You know, it could be that magical that really just like gets you. And then the other one is like, you're crying from this place of like death, like not like swampy, murky, you know, woe is me, you know,
yeah.
So very, very different.
Yeah. I mean, you nailed it with what it actually feels like. Yeah.
Well, I've been there, right? We've all literally been crying on our knees with mascara running down our faces at some point or the other. I know every single woman, like 100%.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Ugh. Thank you. Thank you. You're such a great articulation and gift for breaking things down. So thank you so much. I end every show with just a quick lightning round of questions. The first one is, if you could hug your younger self right now, what would you say?
Oh, my love. Just keep your magic. Don't worry about what anybody else says. Your magic is going to guide you. You're good. You really don't need to like worry about conforming to the world. You're weird. It's fine. Yeah, you're going to find the ones who love your weird.
Yeah, I love that. If you could have the whole world read one book, which would it be?
Oh, man, this is going to stir up some controversy. Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand.
I don't know that one.
Okay. Yeah.
If you could whisper one phrase to everyone on the planet, what would it be?
You are loved.
And how can people connect with you and find your work?
Yeah, that's easy. So mythic.feminine on Instagram, probably the easiest way. Lots of little portals and pathways from there. I have several guided visualizations for women who want to drop into the safety of their womb, embody their feminine longing in a way that is healthy and creational. I do have a more advanced group journey that's coming up. It's called Chalice. That's for women who really are ready to kind of deepen into their full potency and in like in relationship, in union with deeply powerful worldly men. So yeah, not for the faint of heart, but should be really fun.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. I was truly like so excited to speak with you today. Just writing out the topics, each one lit me up. So thankful we got to do this. Thank you for the gift of you.
You are so welcome. I love your energy and thank you for the invitation.
All right, you guys. You know, these were very nuanced topics and it's a hard thing to articulate because they are mostly things that you feel in your body is how you know the difference of them. And I'm excited to have made her as a friend because I have more questions, more personal questions to, you know, dive deep with her on in the future. So I'm so thankful for her. And I can say that her energy, you know, sitting across from her on this video chat was so warm. And I can imagine anyone that, you know, follows her on Instagram or, you know, signs up for her program is going to experience a lot of that warmth. So, okay, I will thank the affiliates. You can always go to jade-bryce.com to sign up for my programs or my newsletter. paleovalley.com/jade is where you can get all of my favorite products. I actually spilt my bone broth in the middle of this conversation, if you heard it, but I was so bummed. But I drink that every single day. It's really benefited my hair, skin, and nails. I ate their meat sticks and their meal bars as snacks. High protein snacks are the best for you. And then I use their fish oil supplements, their organ supplements. I mean, I use everything. PaleoValley.com/Jade. The only thing that I don't use from them, I don't know that they even have it, is sleep products. I get all my sleep products from Bio Optimizers and all my like enzymes. Code Jade gets you a discount from them. I've only been an affiliate for like a month, but I have been using their magnesium for 5 years. It is the best magnesium. It's 8 different types of magnesium. Almost everyone on the planet is magnesium deficient. That is why we struggle with our sleep and other things. If I run out and there's a lag between my next order coming in, I feel the difference in my sleep. It is a powerful product for sleep quality. So it's biooptimizers.com. Code Jade gets you a discount. And then all the pleasure wands and yoni eggs at waands.com. Code Jade for a discount there as well. I use the pleasure wands for my pleasure practice and for manifestation. I use the yoni eggs to strengthen the pelvic floor, which also tones your face, believe it or not. Code Jade for a discount there as well. All right. Thank you guys so much for tuning in and being on this journey with me. It would mean so much if you'd leave a review or share an episode with a friend. You can also join me on Instagram at Untamed and Unashamed Podcast. As always, be a light, stay open, and remember, you belong here. We got what it takes for the circle to break. Revolution lives in me. I belong.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.